Welcome to the European College of Neuropsychopharmacology podcast, where we interview the most interesting people in translational neuroscience.
Hi everyone, welcome to the new ECNP podcast, recorded from the ECNP conference in Vienna. My name is Veerle and I am a third year PhD student at the Alzheimer Center in Limburg at Maastricht University. And today I will talk with researcher and psychologist Dr. Silke Matura. So Silke, may I ask you to introduce yourself?
Yes, hello Veerle. I'm very happy to do this interview with you today. To introduce myself, I'm a psychologist by training and I'm also a certified cognitive behavioral psychotherapist. In the last years, I have mainly focused on research. So I'm a group leader at the mHealth and Lifestyle Modifications Group at University Hospital Frankfurt. And our research focuses on the impact of lifestyle on brain health, cognition, and psychological well-being. So in our study, we use wearables like accelerometers to track behavior in everyday life of our participants. Hmm. What is your background, Valle?
That's a good question. So I did a master's in neuropsychology. So I am actually also a psychologist by training. And currently I am in the third year of my PhD program and I am mainly doing research in the field of the vascular contributions to Alzheimer's disease. Yeah, so I think then we can move on to the PRIME project because we're both working in the PRIME project. So that's the main thing that we will talk about today. So for the listeners, PRIME is a European consortium where we are both part of. The consortium started in 2020 and we are now about halfway of the consortium project. And PRIME stands for Prevention and Remediation of Insulin Multimorbidity in Europe. And this basically means that we are assessing if insulin in the body and brain, and insulin is a hormone that is very important for the glucose regulation in our bodies, and how this might be related to different neuropsychiatric disorders, such as ADHD, autism spectrum disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, but also how it relates to Alzheimer's and cognition. So this has all to do with behavioral changes and changes in cognition. And within the consortium, there are studies ranging from animal studies, genetic studies, but also human behavior studies. So we are both psychologists, so we will mainly focus on the more human cognition part. So Silke, one first question to start off with. What do you like about this consortium, about PRIME?
There are actually very many things I like about PRIME. But what I particularly like is that in PRIME, we are a very multidisciplinary team of experts from all across Europe. So for instance, in the work package that I am leading, in work package 5, the intervention and integrative modeling work package, where there are experts for biomedicine from Norway, there are mathematicians and experts for genetics from the Netherlands, there are experts for psychiatric epidemiology from Denmark, and there are also experts for nutritional medicine from Spain. So we really work with very different expertises and we bring these expertises together, and that's very exciting. So for instance, in my work package, there are two colleagues from Spain and their names are Jordi Salva Salgado and Fernando Fernandez. They are heading one of the largest and most important preventive trials worldwide. So this is the PREDIMED trial I'm talking about. And what they could show is that Mediterranean diet that is either supplemented with olive oil or nuts leads to a better cardiovascular health and also a reduction in the occurrence of breast cancer. So what they are looking now at also is in how far this diet, this Mediterranean diet, also can help to prevent cognitive decline. And within PRIME, we bring these expertises together to investigate different aspects of insulinopathies, such as diabetes mellitus 2, and also to further the understanding of comorbidities that come with these insulinopathies. And hopefully, this will lead to optimized prevention strategies for the multiple comorbidities that come with disturbed insulin signaling.
Yeah. Yeah, I indeed think that it's super interesting that there are so many different disciplines involved in PRIME.
Yeah, I think that's very fruitful. You being an early career scientist, what would you say, what are the advantages of being in such a multidisciplinary international consortium?
Yeah, I think there are many advantages. I think as first, it is already nice to be part of a consortium. I also know a lot of PhDs who really only have their own research. And I think being part of a consortium of a larger group of experienced researchers is super nice, that you can also have bonding with other researchers and talk about what you have done and what you want to achieve further in your research. And I, for example, also have a mentor within PRIME, which is not related at all to my supervision team in Maastricht. And it's very nice to talk about a person out of your research on how it's going. And besides that, I really like PRIME because researchers are not egos. They are just willing to talk with each other. Mm-hmm. And even if you're an early career researcher or a more experienced researcher, it doesn't really matter. You can just connect with each other and talk about your research and help each other further. And I think that's really, really nice. I think we're a really nice group of people who get along with each other very well.
Yes, I have that feeling too. I think that people are very approachable in this project and they are very willing to share their expertise and they're very open to everyone.
Exactly. And it's not everyone's willing to help. I think that's the nicest thing. So then I think we can move on more to what you are doing within PRIME. So can you maybe tell a little bit more about your research?
Mm-hmm. So what we are specifically doing at Goethe University is that we have a clinical trial there and we want to investigate the link between certain lifestyle factors such as physical activity and also diet, how they link to insulin resistance and cognition. So we actually investigate the association between insulin resistance and impairments in cognition. So maybe I should explain shortly what we mean by insulin resistance, because this might not be familiar to everyone. So yes. Insulin resistance is when your muscles, when your cells in your muscles, your cells in fat and liver, they don't respond well to insulin. And they can't easily take up glucose from your blood. And mm-hmm. then as a result, your pancreas makes more insulin to help glucose enter your cells. So as long as your pancreas can make enough insulin to overcome your cells' weak response to insulin, your blood glucose levels will stay in the healthy range. But if this doesn't work anymore, pre-diabetes occurs. And pre-diabetes means that your blood glucose levels are higher than normal, but not high enough to be diagnosed as diabetes. So prediabetes usually occurs in people who already have some insulin resistance or whose beta cells in the pancreas aren't making enough insulin to keep blood glucose in the normal range. Without enough insulin, extra glucose stays in your bloodstream rather than entering your cells. So over time, you could develop type 2 diabetes. So. And pre-diabetes, it's not a very seldom condition. So for instance, in the United States, almost 40% of the population, of the adult population, suffers from pre-diabetes. In Europe, it's a little bit different. There we have about 20%. Percent of adults suffering from pre-diabetes. So
still a lot.
Yeah, it's still a lot. And it comes with some multimorbidities. It comes also with the impairments in cognition. So I think it's really worthwhile to research the underpinnings.
That's definitely true. And how exactly, with what kind of assessments maybe do you assess these interventions you are talking about?
Mm-hmm. So we don't actually do any intervention. What we do is we do observational studies. So we have one cohort of people who already suffer from prediabetes. We also include healthy controls within our trial. And what we do is we use ambulatory assessment. And that means that we can capture behavior in everyday life of our participants. For instance, we use accelerometers that mm-hmm. can capture physical activity in everyday life.
And those are sort of watches then, or what should I?
Yes, it's we use the sensors from Movisense, that's a German company. It's worn on the wrist. It looks, it's not like a smartwatch. It's just the
accelerometer
device.
Only. Yeah.
It can also be worn around the hip, but we thought that wearing it around the wrist might be a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
So this captures physical activity over the, we capture that it over the course of 1 week. And it gives us very detailed information about how much our participants move and also if they're doing exercise. So this is one of the devices, mm-hmm. one of the variables we use. We also have glucose sensors. They have been provided by Abbott. And these glucose sensors, they capture blood glucose levels continuously. So we do not only have information on how much our participants move, but also have a very detailed picture about their blood glucose levels over time. And then we also have, and we have developed an app. We called it the Appetite Mobile app. This app has been developed within the scope of another EU Horizon 2020 project, the E2B Nice project. And with this app, we can capture momentary impulsiveness. We capture mood. We capture stress. We ask participants via this app how much they slept during
and
the night.
They have to fill that in during the day. They get some questionnaires about it.
They get they get prompts. So eight times a day, they are asked to answer different questions. So we get an idea on how they feel, if they feel stressed, how impulsive they are. And these are semi-random prompts. So they come at different times of the day and our participants are asked to complete this. It's quite some work, but we have good compliance rates. So we have evaluated the app and compliance is quite high. And then what we have added to the app that we have developed within E2B Nice is we have added a cognitive task. So our participants, they complete a working memory task at four times a day.
Four times?
Yeah. And it's rather, I find it rather difficult, the task. It's not that easy, really. They have to subtract and add numbers. And then they, in the end, they are asked to put in the solution. It's not that easy, but it enables us to look in how far blood glucose levels impact cognition, and also if there are moderating effects of physical activity. This allows us to look very closely at microtemporal associations also. And since we have participants that already suffer from prediabetes, we can compare this to our participants that are healthy, that have normal blood glucose levels, and also look if there are any differences.
It's indeed super interesting that you can really follow it over the day, and that you can really see at which moments within a day people maybe have higher blood glucose levels and how that can affect cognition at that time point. I think that's really unique. Not many researchers actually can do that. They have glucose measures and cognition measures maybe, but I think the time in between can be much bigger.
Yeah.
So that is definitely interesting. And then you are looking how those glucose levels and the physical activity during the day affects cognition in these tasks in the app. But do you also have visits?
We do also have a very thorough baseline assessment. So we don't just have information on how they perform on the smartphone when they do the task. We also have a very thorough neuropsychological assessment at the first visit. And here we look at very different domains. We make a very thorough working memory assessment, but we also look at processing speed. We assess executive functions and we assess also attention. So we have this information at baseline.
Yes.
And this allows us also to see if there are also that if there are cognitive impairments already present at baseline. And then we also do a follow-up visit later on and we see how this develops.
After. Do you also expect maybe the app to be sort of an intervention for them, that they will watch it more closely? Because you're wearing a watch, I can also think that that will make you move more than you would normally do, maybe.
Actually, we were very careful to make sure that our participants, they don't get any feedback on what they're doing. So although they're wearing the sensors, they don't know how much they move. It might influence a little bit their behavior. They might be more prone maybe to take the stairs instead of the elevator when they go up, or they might move a little bit more. I don't necessarily think that it will really interfere that much with their behavior. They also, what I forgot to mention is that we also get very detailed food protocols. So we assess their diet with the food protocol that is also integrated in the app. So they insert everything that they consume during the day, and we have a very detailed information on what they consume throughout the day. And then this, we can also see how this associates with their blood glucose levels.
Yeah. Lots of information then that you have available. It's also difficult, I think, to analyze, though.
It is very difficult. And it's with ambulatory assessment data, you have to do multi-level modeling. So it is statistically, it's not very easy. It's doable, though. And the big advantage is that you have very many time points for each participant. So even if you don't have huge numbers of participants, you still have enough statistical power to do meaningful analysis. And that's one of the things I also very like.
Yeah.
And one more thing, you see, I'm a big fan of ambulatory assessment, but one more thing which I really like, being a psychologist, being in research for quite some while, I used to do assessments in the laboratory setting. Yeah. So we would have people come into the laboratory, do all our questionnaires or our tasks with them in this setting. And this doesn't really capture everyday behavior. And also, especially for with regard to the food protocols, if you ask somebody, can you please remember, or can you please tell us what you consumed during the last 3 days, I think a lot of information gets lost actually.
Yeah.
But if you ask them to enter what they consumed right after they consumed it, you get much more detailed information.
Makes it much easier, I would say. Yeah.
It comes with some disadvantages because it takes up a lot of time. We did some calculation that our participants on average spend 18 minutes a day just completing these food protocols. But as long as you don't do it over extended periods of time, you still get quite good compliance rates.
For how long do they do it?
Just 3 days.
3 days.
So we have a baseline assessment of the dietary behavior. They are asked to remember what they consumed in the last 24 hours. Yeah. Then we do the assessment via app for 3 days, and then we have another two assessments. So I think we get quite a good picture on how the average
their normal average day
is.
Yeah, I think that should be enough as well. And I think if you make the period much longer, it might be very time consuming for the participants indeed.
Compliance rates go down dramatically if you prolong the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so too. Very interesting. It's really, really nice to see how these ambulatory assessments can capture so many information that it's really difficult indeed to, in the lab setting, get those informations from patients. I think also for the neuropsychological testing, maybe the tasks in between during the day, it's also a super different setting than when you're doing a neuropsychological assessment with a psychologist in the hospital. I think it's super different and maybe also a bit more relaxing for the people at home maybe doing that?
Yeah, it is. It can be more relaxing, but sometimes it's much more stressful. Yeah. For example, if they're, because the prompts, they can't choose when to do this. So the prompt just comes when it comes. And like, let's say they are riding the train or they're just in the middle of a conversation and then they get the prompt and they need to do this.
And it's, there's no way that they can say, I will do it in 15 minutes.
They can delay it a little bit if they want. Yeah. But we also capture context. So we usually know what they were, or we roughly know what they were doing at the time when they had to complete the task.
Yeah, that can have a huge influence, of course, on the task.
Yeah,
and I can also imagine that sometimes they really don't have the time. If you're in an important work meeting or something, I think it's really difficult to then complete a task like that.
Absolutely, yeah. What are you doing within Prime, Lene?
Yeah, that's also a good question. I am also more looking at the cognitive side. So we also do neuropsychological testing over time. But as I said, I'm working at the Alzheimer Center. So we are mainly focusing on Alzheimer-related research. So we are looking at how diabetes and also the related markers, so blood glucose as well, and insulin resistance, how that might affect the levels of Alzheimer's-related proteins in the brain. So we call them Alzheimer biomarkers. So how diabetes might maybe be related to these biomarkers in the brain, and also how these biomarkers in combination with diabetes might interact or might work together to affect cognition over time. Yeah, so that's what I'm mainly looking at. A lot of researchers before already found that diabetes independently leads to cognitive decline and that Alzheimer's disease does that as well. And Alzheimer's disease also really often co-occurs with diabetes. So yeah, there's a question going on if these two might be related. And I think this is, if you really look at the proteins involved in Alzheimer's disease, it can give a better picture if diabetes is actually related to Alzheimer's disease, or it might be related to cognition through another pathway or maybe another type of dementia rather than Alzheimer's. And that's actually also what I'm seeing in my research so far. I actually do not find really a link between diabetes and Alzheimer's disease. It does affect cognition, diabetes on its own, but independently from these biomarkers.
So you don't necessarily find an impact of diabetes on the biomarkers?
I actually don't see anything there. And it's also interesting to see that we actually see quite different effects on cognition as well. So persons with diabetes mainly have effects at baseline, because we are also looking over time and we are mainly looking in elderly people. And for diabetes patients, we mainly see an effect at baseline for attention and executive functioning. And within people who have positive Alzheimer biomarkers, so who have Alzheimer's disease in an early stage, we there see more clearly the effects of memory. So they have lower memory, and also we see a clear decline over time in different cognitive domains. So memory mainly, but also attention and executive decline. But here we see the decline really clearly with the presence of these biomarkers. And in diabetes, I think maybe the effect might have already happened earlier because they are already lower at baseline, but they do not decrease as much. Mm-hmm. So it seems in my research, at least in our data, that they're really independent of each other, that they are different processes in the brain for each of the diseases.
But doesn't Alzheimer disease occur more frequently in people who suffer from diabetes mellitus?
Yeah. There are definitely researchers on that topic.
And but the question might be if it's maybe masked, like if the underlying pathomechanisms are the same, or if it's just that they have accelerated cognitive decline.
Exactly.
And this might present as Alzheimer's.
Yeah. So the clinical picture might be really looking like Alzheimer's disease, but it could still be that they're different, of course. Or it could also be that diabetes leads to more cognitive decline already at baseline, like we show. So therefore, maybe they reach the threshold quicker, at what point they really meet the criteria for Alzheimer's disease, because they are already affected in some domains by the diabetes, for example.
Right, the cognitive resurface, maybe not the same. Yeah, so we see there's still a lot to find out.
Yeah,
a lot to investigate. And that's what we're doing with Prime.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the European College of Neuropsychopharmacology. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the interviewee and not necessarily the official position of the ECNP. And of course, this should not be the basis for clinical treatment decisions.